because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in politics and the Capitol. J.R., we're going to lead with the Marquette poll mm-hmm. because it shows some real tightening in the presidential yes. race. Let's talk about that first. The latest Marquette poll this week showed among likely voters, 650 likely voters, Clinton 41, Trump 38. Now, mm-hmm. that's within the margin of error, because yep. the margin of error on that is 5%. It's 4.5% whether it's registered or likely.
Sorry. Yes,
and then right. Johnson 10, Stein 4, none of the above 8. Significant tightening in yeah. Wisconsin?
And it kind of makes sense in a way, because if you look at where the poll was in early August, Clinton was just off of the convention. Donald Trump had a horrible stretch before that with the gaffes about the Gold Star family and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, that was maybe, as Frank called it, a high watermark for Clinton in early August. Since then, you've seen more questions about her use of private email, what the State Department,
absolutely.
The Clinton Foundation, possible ties to the State Department. So,
pay-to-play allegations.
All this stuff, that makes sense, okay? She's had a steady stream of bad headlines. He's been a little bit more disciplined. I don't want to say completely, but a little bit more disciplined. That makes sense. It would tighten. Now, going from 15 to 3, that's a heck of a swing. That said, you know, there's at least something you can see, put your hands on and go, okay, I see why this might have changed.
But correct me if I'm wrong. This poll was conducted before, in one day, Mr. Trump went to meet with the president of Mexico mm-hmm. and then gave a speech basically reaffirming, we're going to build a wall and they're going to pay for it.
Yes, it happened before he did that, and I don't think the reaction has been that he's going to pick up any Hispanic votes off of that speech after the visit to Mexico.
In fact, some of his Hispanic leaders have jumped from the campaign.
This is the thing. If you talk to Republicans, they will tell you that Hillary Clinton is so disliked, and her negatives went up in this latest poll, you know, a little bit, if that's even possible. But she is so disliked that if Donald Trump can just stay on message for a little bit, for 60-some days, he could win. The problem has been he's yet to prove he can do it for more than a news cycle. He's in Mexico with the early news headlines of that were, you know, positive, and then hours later he's giving the speech in Arizona in which it all snaps back. It's infuriating for Republicans. They can't get this guy to stay on a positive track for long enough to improve his numbers.
But voters don't know who is right. When Mr. Trump said, we didn't discuss who'd pay for the wall, the president of Mexico then tweets, we did. I told him we're not going to do it. We weren't in the room. No. So it's a question of who do you believe? And more on Gary Johnson later. Okay. In the U.S. Senate race, you saw a tightening of that. Now, mm-hmm. that is also within the margin of error. Feingold, 45%. Johnson, 42%. The Libertarian candidate, Phil Anderson of Fitchburg, 6%. Margin of error, 5%. Why did that tighten up?
That's the one I have a hard time figuring out, and I've asked you about this because there wasn't a big event, if you will, between early August and late August that happened in that race. Ron Johnson, who, you know, has taken some criticism for not being as visible in the state early in his term as he could have been, hitting the pavement more in August and July, you know, more local news headlines. So that's the only thing I can think of. But there wasn't an event that you'd expect that would snap a race back for 11 points to, or 12, what it was, to 3. Now,
12 to 3.
I've got to be honest, in talking to people, I never got the impression that this was really a 11, 12, some polls this week, 15-plus point race. It's going to be more like a 4 to 6 point margin, what you think it probably is. Yeah. But it's the perception of the race that's been hurting Johnson, that you see these polls out there showing him, like Marquette early in August, down by more than 10 points. Can he use this poll? Maybe people say a second look at the race, say, okay, we're going to come back and maybe play here. Because you look at the map, and the resources seem to be going to places like New Hampshire and Indiana, Pennsylvania. They're pulling out of Ohio, it seems like, right now. So can he get them to come into here? I think there's an opportunity to hold the fort, because Larry Sabato, who does like the crystal ball, he's a University of Virginia professor, kind of a respected prognosticator, if you will.
Yeah.
He moved the race from lean Democrat to likely Democrat this week. So the national perception is hurting Johnson. Will this help him push back against it?
And now let's get into a new topic. Let's get into the third-party groups mm-hmm. and their spending. The group Let America Work has opened up on Feingold. They're saying he voted against military 11 times, only senator to vote against military intelligence. Put this in context for us.
There are a couple of tracks that pro-Johnson folks are using to go through Feingold. One is the national security thing. He was the only vote against Patriot Act back in 2002, whenever it was. He ran that in 2004, defended it, defends it still. But in the national environment we're facing with lone wolf terrorism, things like that, Republicans think there's an opportunity to paint Feingold out of touch, and they're going to use that. The other track you're going to see is going to be the ethics stuff. Now, this week, there was a complaint filed with the federal government over what is alleged a Hatch Act violation. What that basically says is if you're a federal executive branch employee, you can't be doing political things, such as being a candidate for office. Now, you don't become a candidate when you formally file.
Yes.
You can't have, like, strategy conversations or soliciting support or circulating nomination papers. Those things are forbidden. Now, I made some calls with the office that take these complaints to ask. I've never dealt with one before. What happens with this? The bottom line is that complaint's going to go nowhere, because if you are a federal employee, they have authority over you. If you're not longer a federal employee, they don't. And so, because Feingold's no longer employed by them, there's no repercussions for him. And what they're alleging he did may not really be illegal. I mean, you can have conversations with your family and friends. Should I run? Should I not run? So there, nothing can happen. But it is a quiver in the, it's an arrow for Johnson and his folks to go after Feingold on the ethics thing. That's the big takeaway from that.
Okay, but help me understand this complaint. Is it alleging that when he was a special emissary appointed by the Secretary of State, John Kerry, he was assigned to Africa, and he was engaged then in planning his U.S. Senate campaign?
Basically, they're saying he laid the foundation for it.
Who filed it?
The state GOP, executive director's name's on it. And again, it's about making allegations that he was doing these he wasn't supposed to be doing. Now, there is an advisory opinion I read from 2009 that tells you what you can and can't do. And there is a gray area in there of whether what Feingold did, whatever, even if he were still employee of the federal government, he'd get trouble for. But again, it doesn't really matter about that. It matters because we've covered elections for years. People file complaints all the time. The bottom line is they have a complaint saying this person is either under investigation or is accused of, or whatever language they want to use. That's why they do. That's the big takeaway. It's not because I don't get in trouble with anybody.
Let's step back here. How many third-party groups are now involved in the U.S. Senate campaign? Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, how many?
Well, the Freedom Partners, which is a Koch brothers pack, they're up on the air, running roughly 100.
Is that the group that was going to spend $2 million and now they're going to spend one?
About $100,000 a week they've been putting on the air.
Okay, Freedom Group.
They've got that. Let America Work is a pro-Johnson super pack. They're going up in the air. I think today is the first day of the ad buy runs through September 11th, I believe. If you check the federal FEC filings, there are lots of little, like the NRA's got, you know, doing mailers and door hangers, and you're seeing things like that. We have not seen a big onslaught just yet of outside spending. Now, we're getting
the
attention.
The key is yet. Go ahead.
So will we? Will the last 2 months be, on the Feingold side, the League of Conservation Voters, they have the LCFE Defense Fund. They've done some ads trying to tie Johnson to the Koch brothers. There's one about, you know, the Koch brothers be on the line for Johnson. He's, you know, votes their way, that kind of thing. Another run they did this spring, I think it was, trying to say he's on the side of polluters. So they've been doing stuff as well. But will we see in the last 66 days, will we see an onslaught of ads where you really see us become a focus nationally?
What about third-party groups that are trying to help elect Feingold?
That's the LCFE Defense Fund. They're trying to help him out by going after Johnson.
Thank you. Okay.
And then, you know, there are others. You're going to see other small stuff, you know, the door hangers, the phone banks, those kinds of things. But, like, big displays of media, we're not really seeing huge stuff just yet. But there's stuff out there.
But in this latest poll, when there's only 3% a margin of error, that may bring in a lot more spending by some of these third-party groups and help Johnson raise some more money.
Well, the big thing, too, is will Donald Trump take Wisconsin seriously and really play here? Now, he's got a state director, got a communications director. Not running TV ads here. Now, there is Clinton. There is a GOP infrastructure from the state party, the RNC, but there isn't as much nearly a Trump presence as there is like with Clinton. So will he really play here? That's another big question kind of going down the last 2 months.
Okay. Also, final thing out of the Mr. Franklin's poll. Governor Walker's approval rating has jumped 5 percentage points, which is why we're going to highlight it. I mean, if it was just a slip of 1 or 2, how significant is 5 percentage points?
Talk to me after the next 2 polls.
Okay.
Because in March, back in March, Republicans were more jazzed at the vote in the spring primary than Democrats were because of the presidential race. In that last March poll before the primary, the Marquette poll found Walker's numbers also bumped up, you know, a bit from where they'd been. That disappeared immediately after that. Now, this latest poll, you know, look, in covering polls, people pick apart every little thing about the demographics, how many Republicans, how many Democrats. This one was maybe a little more Republican, some people feel, than maybe it should be for ideal November election in Wisconsin. But that said, will the numbers stay? A couple more polls to show he's really on an upward trajectory. I've asked around about this too. What's happened in the last 3-4 weeks that would really change Walker's circumstances?
Is it the effect of the listening sessions statewide, which are by invitation only?
The only things that I've been told is, well, one, he was up in northern Wisconsin when the flooding happened, you know, acting, you know, like a governor up there, addressing your problems. Two, the unrest in Milwaukee, he was out there saying side by side with the county executive and the mayor, you know, addressing those issues, sending more money to Milwaukee, at kind of a statesman type, you know, situation. But is that enough to move your poll numbers 5 points? I don't know. So come back to me again. Like I said, two more polls, and we kind of know if there's a trend there for Walker.
Yeah, that's a good point. Here's an issue, new subject. Here's an issue I didn't see coming about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Questions about care and fiscal mismanagement at the King Home for Veterans. Now, you have Democratic legislators, and today the Assembly Democrats joined 4 Democratic senators asking for a federal Veterans Department administration. But meanwhile, Mr. Skolko, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, King provides safe, top-quality care to our nation's heroes. Wisconsin should be proud of our veterans' homes. You have the governor's representative saying the Division of Quality Assurance, if I have that right, in the Department of Health, can investigate these things because it's headed by a career civil servant, not a political appointee. Mm-hmm. Did you see the King thing coming?
No. The state administration has been hanging its hat on these ratings that show it, you know, very, you know, highly thought of, if you will. But the story in the Capital Times really kind of detailed complaints from, I think they were 2 dozen people.
Yeah, they really went in depth on that.
Talking about problems. And what you're seeing now, for example, one of the veterans figures in Wisconsin said one complaint about a veteran care is one too many. You're seeing lawmakers from both sides calling for an audit. And right. Rob Coles, the co-chair of the audit committee, says we will meet in the next couple of weeks and approve a very detailed audit that we can of what's going up there. So Veterans Affairs is trying to defend the care it provides in this environment right now of people going, something's not right, and oh, by the way, an election coming up in 2 months. We better take care of this.
Well, that's my next question. We both of us want, obviously, our veterans to get the best possible care, but what about the timing? This is a rising in 66 days, let's use your date, before the election, and it's in the district of Republican Senator Luther Olson, who's up for re-election. And is the timing suspect?
For these calls, hey, they're jumping. The Democrats are jumping on this issue because it's potent, possibly potent. I've seen releases this week saying that Luther Olson was asleep at the switch for the last several years. There have been complaints raised before, and they didn't do anything about it, so they're just acting now to cover their butts. So we'll see. Can they package it in an effective ad campaign? That's a big thing. I mean, we both know you can write 1,000 stories about an issue, but until it's in an ad campaign, it's really burning election necessarily. So that's one of the challenges for Democrats. If they really want to, if there's a political end game to this, that's one of the challenges for
them. Well, Wisconsin and I did its campaign interview with Senator Olson this week, and let's listen to him because I asked him, are you concerned about the care at the King home? Let's listen to what he said. Are you worried about the care veterans get at the King home?
People have always talked to me about what's going on in King since I've been in the Senate and represent them. A lot of it was dealing with making sure we had enough employees. And if you look at the budgets over time, we have put money in there for more employees. The problem is King is sort of in a beautiful spot, King, Wisconsin, but there is not any large metropolitan areas to draw workforce from. And so we put money in there to help them hire new employees. But what's happening up there is that folks are coming to King with more acute mental, physical, and behavioral problems, and making sure that we have the skilled staff to take care of them, I think, is one of the issues that has been raised on my radar screen really just in the last couple of weeks. You know, we always talked about number of employees, and they're working on that, but when you have folks that have those issues, it takes a certain special skill to deal with veterans. It's a great place. It's a great place if you want to go and live out your life and things like that. But what do they say? About 50% of the people coming there now have dementia. And so we have to make sure that folks are getting the care that they need, and that's why I asked for the audit.
JR, we just heard Senator Olson say they have trouble finding help given that it's in a rural area. Many of these veterans have dementia, which pose unique treatment problems. Do you think this can rise to the level of the federal VA scandal at Toma or the Lincoln Hill scandal?
Possibly, but again, go back to the media campaigns. I mean, the Toma VA has become part of the Senate race between Feingold and Johnson. You know, that's part of what helps raise the awareness, if you will, is when you see that kind of stuff. I'm sure Lincoln Hill's problems, if Governor Walker runs re-election in 2018, that will factor in somehow, some way in that race. So those are the things that, these are problems. I don't want to downplay them at all, but we're talking the political side of these things, if you will. If it's in an ad campaign, it's more likely to raise the profile and get voters' attention in the next 2 months.
Well, and also, if the Joint Audit Committee authorizes an audit, as Senator Coles said they will, let's be frank, that audit's not going to be done by the November 8 election.
I think he talked about 6 to 9 months in one story I read. So, you know,
it's a ways off.
Yeah.
So the Republicans are hoping that there's no new revelations that would damage, in this case, Senator Olson. And Senator Tiffany, you saw the press release. He's also, I mean, he represents a contiguous district, but there's some allegation that he knew about this, but I don't know anything about that. Okay, let's move on. The Elections Commission this week approved the mailing of 1 million postcards to people. And this is part, well, as Sean Johnson and I, welcome back on vacation, discussed last week, we're beginning to know the rules of the elections. Early voting is going to occur as early as September 24 in Madison, and it's going to occur very early in Milwaukee, which is what the Republicans had hoped to have avoided. But so now there's the 1 million postcards. Is this part of this 258,000 PR campaign, do you think?
No, actually, the state legislature passed a law earlier this year that put Wisconsin in this consortium that looks for basically unregistered voters who are eligible and sends them postcards to try and tell them how to get registered. I think the cost is around $268,000, half paid for by a grant, half paid for by the feds, I think. And it's basically trying to find these folks, say, hey, you're not registered, you are eligible, here's how you do it. You know, it's, I think 20 states are in this consortium right now, so it's part of that find them and get them on the rolls, if you will.
Well, thanks to the Elections Commission for providing PDFs or mock-ups of how the postcards are going to look. But so 1 million cards, postcards in the mail coming up soon. JR, we have passed Hope Agenda 1, Hope Agenda 2, dealing with the heroin and opiate addiction. This week I had a chance to interview Dr. Wanda Feiler, president of the American Academy of Family Physicians. And I really talked to her about where physicians told to prescribe opioids and in the 1990s and 2000s. She gave an amazing answer. So let's take a couple minutes and listen to her answer. I just find it incredible. Let's listen to Dr. Wanda Feiler, president of the American Academy of Family Physicians.
Back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, there was a national campaign, and it's called Pain is the Fifth Vital Sign. And America's physicians were told, you're not doing a good job on managing pain. We need you to be more liberal with opioids. And that came from the federal government, it came from the Veterans Administration, it came from multiple sources, some private associations, some industry people. And I think physicians overall felt indicted. And we were told people are suffering, people are in pain, and you need to start prescribing more. Health systems look at your patient satisfaction scores, and one of the questions is how well managed was your pain? And I have members all over this country who've had hospital administrators come to them and say, you need to be prescribing more pain medication because your patient satisfaction scores aren't good. And patients and physicians actually had their salaries dinged because they refuse to give opioids. The goal is to assess each patient individually. There may be a time when an opioid is appropriate, but more often than not, it's not. How do you help the patient understand that? I also need to get the health systems and still some of those administrators, we need to get that pain satisfaction off the table around pain issues. There are people who will really need it. Pain is real, but we also have to balance the need of the individual with the health of the community and the safety of the nation. First thing is to ask the public to recognize that we're going to be really judicious, and not just family physicians, emergency departments, dentists, a lot of the places where we see these medications often start, your orthopedic surgeons, your your neurologists, those people are not going to be giving pain medications the way that maybe society has gotten used to. And it's not because we're here to suffer, but we're here to do no harm. And how do we help you to find other ways and other modalities by which we can help to treat your pain? We've actually, as an organization, come out with an opioid toolkit for practices to use that looks at things like depression and family history and alcohol abuse and all sorts of other things that put you at substantially increased risk for becoming one of those patients who have addiction, and deploying that into the practices.
Here you have a respected leader saying one reason for the heroin and opioid abuse epidemic is that doctors were told in the late 1990s and 2000 prescribed more. I just find that an incredible disclosure. I find it very interesting. I hear they're going to work on another HOPE agenda for next session. Are you hearing the same thing?
I've not asked about that lately, but what surprised me, it's been a good run for John Nygren. He's obviously been personally touched by this issue.
Yes.
They have made a lot of progress with these bills, and I'm sure there's more on the agenda for him.
And just a programming note, 1 week from today, I'm going to be interviewing three addiction specialists talking about the new opioid prescription guidelines just adopted by our Board of Medical Examiners. JR, Department of Revenue and Fiscal Bureau put out, now we're talking numbers.
Yeah. Our specialty.
On June 30, the end of the fiscal year, they were $85 million short in collections. Sounds like a lot of money, but there,
it's
I teed you up.
0.6% of what the off from the projection from January. I mean, $85 million is a lot to you and I, but in state government, it's a $15 billion-plus dollar budget per year.
Yeah.
It's not a whole lot of money. You know, and there are all these things, and this is also just one piece of the picture, all right? This is just the revenue side.
Yes.
So income taxes, sales taxes, excise taxes. We will get in mid-October the other side of the ledger, basically, the expenses.
Reconciling the spending with the tax.
There are also departmental revenues, things like that. So we'll get a real bottom line of how the fiscal year ended, 15, 16, in about another 6 weeks. It gives a better picture. The bottom line, though, is that we were going to have a surplus before this, you know, a good balance. It's smaller now. It went from like 321 at the end of this past year down $85 million.
Yeah.
Now, one thing to note is that part of the reason why we're going to have a positive balance into this budget in another 7-8 months is that this past spring, the Walker administration put off paying $101 million in commercial paper debt, essentially.
Which other administrations have done, they pointed
out.
Go ahead.
They pushed it off past this budget. It saved them. It added about $101 million to the checkbook right now. That adds $2.3 million long-term debt to ledger going on the road. Because of that move, we should end this budget, you know, should, June 30th of 2017, about mid-80s, $80
million. $87 million after you set aside your $65 million statutory.
So now that is a very small cushion.
That's the smallest rainy day fund maybe in the of all
Well,
states.
The rainy day fund is separate. You remember
Governor
keeps talking about that, but it's a very small balancing checkbook.
Thanks for the correction.
So the bottom line is no need for a budget repair bill, which is the last thing we always want to do right now. And even if things did get a little bit worse, they could deal with them in the spring and they come back in for the next session.
And here's a takeaway. When they do reconcile spending and tax collections in the report that DOA must issue October 15th, it's going to be the lead item on Rewind that week because it's a few days before the election. Okay, let's go to stock report.
Rising. Mike Gallagher, Republican running for the 8th Congressional District. When Reed Ribble announced his retirement, this became the most competitive seat in the Wisconsin delegation by far. Gallagher put out a poll last week that had him up 16 points. That is eye-popping, considering that district, it's got a Republican lean even in presidential year, but that's a pretty healthy margin. And I've been asking, well, why? One reason I've heard is that Gallagher's on the air, basically dominating the airwaves this summer when he's running for the primary, because he moved back to the district a year ago to work for Governor Walker's campaign and kind of built back up his name ID, and it burned in, apparently. Now, the question for Tom Nelson, the Democrat, is can you bring him back to earth? We're seeing the first signs of that this week. Nelson has a new ad out, this first of the general election, talking about Social Security, saying God would break that quote-unquote promise of Social Security. I'm sure they're going to pound him on that. They'll go negative for a while and try to bring him back to earth. We're also, I mean, Gallagher's got NRCC put him on the Young Guns program, which is a designation for like their top recruits. Paul Ryan will be at the Wisconsin LSU football game at Lambeau Field for a tailgate fundraiser for Gallagher. He is a top GOP recruit, and he's, you know, good numbers for him. Yeah. But still some more to come.
Okay. But and mixed.
Gary Johnson, so a Libertarian candidate for president.
Sir Paul last night.
Okay. Sir Paul last night. He's making Wisconsin a focus. Now, we have a history. Go back to 1996. Ross Perot did well here. So there may be some fertile territory for him. Ed Thompson got 10% in 2002 as a Libertarian in the governor's race. Here's the thing about Johnson. He's 11% in the Marquette poll this last one. Charles Franklin, the director, noted third-party candidates tend to see their support wane close election day because voters go, well, in theory, I want to vote against these two major party candidates, but when it comes time to pull the trigger, am I really going to do it? And so will he stick around at that point? He could be an impact if he does. The big thing for Johnson, too, is he has to make the debate stage, the national debate stage for president. If he does, there's a real opening for him to be an impact in this race. If he does not, as somebody told me, game over. It fades away.
And let's listen to 1 minute of what Gary Johnson said at Sir Paul last night, making many of those same points.
So, this is the craziest election ever, right? And you know how crazy it is? I'm going to be the next president of the United States. That's how crazy it is. Look, right now there are three scenarios out there in this upcoming election. One is that Trump gets elected. One is that Hillary gets elected. And if either one of them get elected, does anybody think that polarity in this country is going to get any better? It's going to get worse than ever. I mean, they want to kill each other. That's all they want to do. Well, then there's this third scenario, this big six-lane highway down the middle that... And the big six-lane highway down the middle is reflective of what most people in this country believe. Fiscally conservative, small government, socially inclusive. I think we're all questioning our military interventions. And I think you can make a case that that third scenario is the only scenario that has a chance of actually succeeding. If we're in the presidential debates, and I believe that there's a better than 50% chance that we will, 100% of America will know who we are. And that portends running the table on this whole thing. We would not be doing this if there wasn't that opportunity. And that said, you all rock. You are all awesome. I can't believe you're here. Packers are playing tonight. You're here. Thank you very, very, very much. You're the best. Thank you.
And that is how Mr. Johnson hopes to one, makes the debate stage, and then onto the presidency, the White House.
The six-lane highway.
The six-lane highway. Falling.
Abortion. Last week, Planned Parenthood announced its closing clinic in the Fox Valley. That now leaves
three.
Madison and Milwaukee are the last two places.
Two in Milwaukee, one in Madison.
Abortion. So there is that, which anti-abortion forces celebrated. Two, number of abortions performed has been going down in Wisconsin. The state has started beginning, I think, in 87, has started collecting information, number of abortions performed in Wisconsin. It ticked up from 87 to 88, but since 88, it's been generally trending downward. Yeah. We're now down, I think, to a third of where we were in the late 80s. It's also been six straight years of declines to where we're at right now.
Okay, that's a good choice. Okay, just a programming note. Wisconsin I has begun taping interviews with candidates in the November 8 election. That's all at wisi.org. A lot of news, man. The beat goes on. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 2nd.